And it's like this person drops.
You're listening to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Day every day, the truth of the new is never on the news, but you can catch it here, News on the Flip Side, only on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
You are listening to UPRN 107.9 New Orleans.
I had had enough.
Well, you drove out there into the middle of nowhere and had some sort of loud verbal display challenging ET in general out in the middle of nowhere?
Oh, yeah, that's what I was doing. I actually had a pistol in my hand at the time. I was really ticked off. When I was having this fit, I was waving the gun in the air, okay, and I had this fit. And at this moment, I said, okay.
He was a Louisiana man named Montaldo. Folks around called him Six Gun Joe. Worked with ICAR, don't you know? Investigating UFOs. When an alien lit right there on the ground, commenced to throw in his weight around. Now, old Six Gun didn't take too kindly to that kind of thing. Especially without Vaseline or anything, you know. Seriously. Well, Six Gun looked that critter right in the eye and said, any last wish before you die, you'll reach for his gun quick as a twig and said, fill your claw, you son of a bitch. Now, a legend spread across the land about this pistol-waving man. But if you're from space or from Earth below, you don't give no lip to Six Gun Joe.
Welcome to Your Cover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening, everyone. I hope everyone can hear us okay this evening. Welcome to another episode of UFO Undercover. Sorry, I was actually talking with Karen Dolan and forgot we were actually going live. It's a dangerous thing when I get people in the queue that I like. And I was watching, in all fairness to y'all, to the listeners, I was watching the queue. It's just, we got to talking. And anyway, welcome everyone to another episode of UFO Undercover. I hope everyone had a great morning, great evening, great afternoon, wherever you are on our beautiful blue planet. If you're one of my Facebook followers, you will notice that it flooded where I live today. All of that rain came down in less than 20 minutes. And I mean, you can see by the pictures, water blowing up out the sewers 3 foot high like little geysers, cars and trucks, water over the hoods, flowing over. You could just see the parking lots from both our complex and our office building look like one giant lake. And that was literally only 20 minutes of rain. Sometimes down here we get 2 or 3 days worth of that. And when that happens, then you start seeing a foot of water in people's houses. And that's pre-hurricane. That's just springtime. we actually hope that we can make it, because some of the worst floods we ever had, April 9th, May 3rd, May 5th, April 15th, these are all floods where there was 2 to 3 feet of water in people's houses in Metairie. Remember, Katrina only put a foot of water in these people's houses in Metairie. It was a city that got deluged. So for us, it's like, oh, let's get through spring, and then, oh, yay, hurricane season's here. So tonight's guest is Karen Dolan. Most of y'all should be familiar with Karen. She's been hosting Through the Keyhole for, God, longer than I can remember now. She speaks all over the place on a whole wide range of topics, which y'all going to find out tonight, because we're going to cross several topics. Anytime her and I get together, we'll cross at least probably 10 or more topics this evening with relatively ease. So welcome, yeah. Karen.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks so much for having me on. I always love doing your show with you.
Has it actually got warmer in New York yet?
Today for about 10 minutes, yeah, it was great. And it rained again. Yesterday was gorgeous. And, of course, I was at work, but it looked really beautiful, and I got outside on my lunch hour. But today was warm, too. I think spring might actually finally be here. No, but it was funny. You're talking about all the rain and the flooding that you get. I mean, around Rochester, New York, we can usually tell it's spring because the basement floods. You know, if we have an inch or so of standing water in the basement, then, okay, it's spring.
We have made it to springtime officially. I've been waiting for it. I mean, it hasn't been a cold winter for us. I know y'all had a harder winter than we did. All we got was mainly, I think we had 3 days below 50 this year. We're a couple of days in the teens, but this year, I think there was maybe 5 days. I can tell you all this. I didn't. My big coat never even came out the closet. The biggest thing I wore all season, I have a light little leather jacket I wear. That's the biggest thing I wore all season long. And most of this year was a sweatshirt. That was it. And that was just running out, it just doesn't get that cold here. It just, okay. And I'm grateful it don't. That's why I live here. That's why I endure the hurricane, so I don't have to dig myself out of my house, down my sidewalk into my car, and then dig my car outside and go to wherever I'm going. I just don't want to deal with that.
That's normal winter, isn't it?
For y'all, yeah. For y'all, it is normal winter.
Tromp through the 3 feet of snow and get out the push broom to get the snow off the car. Yeah.
For me, it's like a nightmare. And you see, whereas I notice people up north do not drive well in the when it comes to snow, people down south, look, just if you ever hear, anybody up north is ever in this city and it happens to snow while you're here, don't leave your room. Just stay. The snow's going to be gone in like less than 5 hours, so just stay where you are. Because, look, these people think that in order to stop, okay, you wait till you get to the stop sign because it's roads of ice, and then you step on the brakes. And, of course, by that time you slide another block before you actually stop.
Yeah, so that's how you slide right through the intersection and hope nobody else is coming. God.
And they don't understand to, like, slow down, you know. I'm like, gosh, it's not rain, you know. It's because snow is not as bad as ice is, but these idiots, because what happens is we get, like, 2 inches of snow, which, by the way, is like an epidemic for us. Mm-hmm. And then it melts halfway and it creates a sheet of ice on the highway. And these idiots, They even tell you, just don't go any ways, because we know it's not going to last long. Just stay at home and leave it alone. Oh, no, no, no. Every idiot and their mom got to get out there and try to drive on this stuff.
Yeah.
So you're just watching. I was lucky. I had to learn to drive in the snow when I was a teen, when I was in the service. But
oh, me too. I mean, before I had my driver's license, before I even took my road test, I was on my learner's permit, and my older son had me drive, like, the part of the highway in Rochester that they call the can of worms, because it's an interchange of several different highways crossing each other, and it's a mess. And we were out practicing one time, and she said, oh, good, it's snowing. Let's go up and do the can of worms. And she said, if you can drive the can of worms during a blizzard, there's nothing they can throw at you in a road test that'll be difficult. And I thought, oh, geez, great. You know, thanks so much.
Hey, but it's probably true. I mean,
she was right, yeah.
It's how funny. It works out.
Yeah, and you know, a couple months ago, about 2 months ago now, I guess, I went down to Phoenix for the UFO Congress, for the Open Minds event, and I drove down and, of course, got caught in that blizzard that was coming up through Texas and Oklahoma.
Oh, and yeah, you drove right through the middle of it.
Yeah, I did. Well, I was trying to miss it, but I did. I stopped at the edge of Oklahoma because I just got tired. I was trying to go farther that night, and if I had gone as far as I wanted to, I would have missed the whole thing. I would have gotten just past it. But I got tired, and I stopped in Oklahoma, and when I got up, it was snowing. And I thought, oh, great, you know, I've seen this before. Went into a gas station to get a cup of coffee, and they're all talking, oh, my God, all the roads are closed.
Yeah.
Like, from where I was to halfway across Texas, and I thought, oh, geez.
Because Texas people don't like snow either.
Well, yeah, and I'm thinking, oh, you know, it's Texas. They're not used to it. And so I waited like 2 hours to see if the roads would open up, and they said the plows were out, but the plows were going off the road because it was just so bad. And actually,
they don't know how to drive.
Well, you know, I looked at, my first thought was, oh, yeah, well, it's Texas, and they're not used to snow. And then I looked out the window, and I couldn't see across the street. It was coming down so hard. So I thought, well, wait a little bit. It's got to let up. And after a couple of hours, it really didn't. But then I thought, look, I'm not going to sit here in this gas station all day. And I'm from New York State. I can drive in snow. So I got out there. I thought, I can do this. It was a mess. Even by New York standards, I was a little scared. You know, I got out there 40 minutes later. I'm out in this total whiteout thinking, this is it. I'm going to die on a highway in Oklahoma. And they're not going to find me until spring.
Yeah, because the heartland gets that wet snow.
Yeah.
You know, everything from, like, Dallas up until maybe Nashville, and that little thin air, they're getting all that Gulf moisture coming in, so it's making snow, but it's still kind of heavy. It's still got that, I forgot what they call it. It's because it's coming from the Gulf water. It's a seawater. It's heavier. And so it kind of makes a plat, and then, of course, if it's below freezing, everything starts turning to ice. I don't even like driving through that. I have driven through a couple of blizzards when I was younger, and then I got stuck in one coming back from my second X conference I ever went to. Actually, no, that was the first X conference I ever went to. I was bringing a friend of mine home back to West Virginia, and I scared the crap out of all of them too, Karen. I'm doing like 85, 90. Y'all got to get that on it. Well, it was pretty nice, gorgeous. It was just cold.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I said, wow, there's something white on the side of the road. And I really wasn't paying attention. I'm like, what the hell is this? So I'm looking, and I noticed, man, it's awful white on the road. And then I noticed it was white in the middle of the road. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it's snowing sideways. I'm going 85, and the snow is going 85 the other direction. I'm like, uh-oh.
Oh, my God.
So I'm sitting there going, well, you know, you've driven in snow before. You know, it's not a big deal. Nice big van, four-wheel drive. I said, what the hell? I noticed the rigs wasn't slowing down, so I slowed down to 70 and just kept cruising. And I blew through it in about 2 hours. It was a nice, good snow, but it never got icy. If it gets icy, I'm parking. I don't drive good in ice. I mean, I can drive maybe 10 miles an hour in ice. But snow, I'm kind of, it doesn't really bother me as long as it's not, you know, sticking to the highway. Then I'll start like, oh, well. But I always worry because we were up in the mountains and we'd be coming down the mountain and I'm thinking, you know, down here they always got those signs in the bridge may ice in cold weather. And I'm thinking, well, we're all doing 70, 75 coming down the mountain, going to go on top the bridge as we go back up the other mountain. I'm thinking, really, Joe, do you want to be anywhere around these rigs when we hit that bridge? So I would slow down and let them go across first. Just in case they lost control, because I didn't want to be sitting next to one. And I noticed they got all of those what do you call them, those ramps in case the truck gets away, they can run up the side.
Oh, yeah, runaway truck lanes or something.
Yeah, whatever the hell
yeah.
I call them. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I remember the first time I seen one of them. I'm like, what the hell is that for?
I know.
And a friend of mine's laughing his ass. And he's just, you know, seen one? And just saying, dude, I've been living in a flat part of the country for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have them up here either. It's hilly here, but we don't have mountains. Not where I am, not in Rochester.
But I guess they work, so that's weird.
I guess. Well, I was driving from Phoenix to Sedona a couple of years with somebody from a conference, and we were driving her car, and she had, like, I forget if it was a Jeep or a Land Rover or something. It was really big. And I drive a Saturn, so it's really, my car is really little. And she was driving, and then she said, oh, God, you know, I really got this headache. Would you mind driving for a bit? And I was like, sure, I like to drive. Well, then right after that, of course, we're going downhill at freaking 90 degrees, and I'm in this giant, heavy car that is way more massive than what I'm accustomed to. And I'm thinking, boy, those guardrails look really, really tiny. And then we start passing these runaway truck lanes. I thought, oh, dear God, just get me out of here.
Yeah,
after a few minutes, she's like, you want me to drive? Yes, please.
Yes, take your car back now. Thank you very much.
Yeah. But
most vehicles don't bother me. Because a lot of times we rent cars when we're traveling. So, I mean, if we take cars, it's fine. See, I don't like taking mine because it's not the mileage or anything like that. Because most cars now go 200,000-300,000 miles easy. So a lot of them, I got cars that are going to go 4. But I got, like, we're coming back from, we were in New Jersey and we're coming back. And I get antsy. So it's my car and I know how my car drives. So, man, I'll be doing, I'm not going to tell y'all, but fast. Really fast, like stupid fast sometimes. But, you know, I made the trip from New Jersey to New Orleans in 18 hours last time. It was a 24 and a half hour trip. And that was going up, and I was doing 80 going up. And it was still 20. So, we drove. What happened was we were going to stop, and then we had drove like 12 hours. And, you know, Linda and I usually have a rule not to drive more than 8 because when we were younger, we would drive 12. But now, man, I get all stiff and crap. Unless I'm in a really, really nice vehicle, I get out of it. I'm like, God, who just beat the daylights out of me? But we had driven like 12, and we had driven through. By the way, that night we got hit by a hailstorm on the top of some mountain in Virginia.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, it was just wild. And so all of a sudden we're both like, screw it, we're 8 hours from home. So we just put the hammer down and just cruised on through Georgia, Mississippi, and home. But we cruised for so long and so fast, when we got out of the car, I'm not kidding you, for 2 days, I felt like I was still moving. And we did that coming back from Arkansas one time. So I ain't doing that no more.
It's like they say about being on a boat. You get your sea legs, and then it takes a while to get your land legs again. Yeah, I know that feeling.
Yeah, because I got out, I'm kind of like, whoa, man, is this going to stop anytime soon? Going up wasn't a big deal, but coming back, I was like, damn. But sometimes it's how it is. You got to be places. You got to work. I mean, when you do ufology, ladies and gentlemen, you know, we're doing this mostly for free. I mean, not everybody, but most of us are. And a lot of times you got places you have to be that, you know, ufology is very important to me. And I spend a lot of money on this. And every now and then I get lucky and make a dollar. But it's important to me. But still, I've got a life that I have to support. And the radio station costs money. So, I mean, you know. Feel free, by the way, make a donation to UPR anytime y'all want, but it does. It costs money, so.
Yeah.
Now,
donate to any of the hosts. We're cool with that, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right. A host could use it, too. Trust me, all the hosts could use a little help in hand here.
Yeah.
You know, I know we got a pretty big audience, and look, just because you live overseas, because I know. See, if you don't want to do it like that, one lady refused to do anything on the Internet. So I actually had an app that came with my phone and is now on my computer, and I can take credit cards. So
cool.
No excuse.
I have it on my phone, too.
You know, it's just something you need these days, unfortunately, in this fast-paced, crazy world. No, I'm going to save that PC conversation for another show. That's not for tonight. And no, the PC is not going away. Just don't pay attention to Apple. Nobody's getting rid of their PC because they don't have the power. Laptops and pads don't have the power of PCs. They're good, but still, you still got to have a good tower somewhere if you're going to do anything real. If you're just screwing around, you can have a laptop. People like me, laptops are not going to do it.
Yeah. So are you're not an iPhone person then? You have a Droid?
I had an iPhone. I had two iPhones. I had the iPhone, I had the 3, and then I got the 4S. And I liked them both, but I got to tell y'all, my HTC One iPhone ain't got nothing on it. First off, this thing's got almost a 5-inch screen. It's got the best video and audio I've ever heard on any phone anywhere. It's just, now I got it. If you've got Wi-Fi in your car, you can, like if you're watching YouTube, you can turn it on your Wi-Fi in your car and listen to your stereo.
Oh, my God. No, not in my car. Mine's a 98. I'm never going to drive anything else.
listen, I was going to say, because I have a 96 RAV. If you have a car that doesn't have Wi-Fi, they got a little thing. You can buy it at one of these dollar stores. It costs $5, and it'll tune to any one of your lower FM stations, like 88.1, 88, whatever's vacant. You tune it to that. You plug it in the top of your phone, and whatever you're listening to on your phone, you can now listen to on your stereo in your car. It is fantastic. So now, and you can't say this on the air either, I take my phone and I set it on this. I got this drawer across the front of my Toyota, and I set it in there, and I plug it all in. So now I'm listening because I can listen. We've got a really nice stereo system in the car. I can listen to it. And if I want, I could watch it, but I'm not watching it because I'm driving. I'm telling y'all.
Right.
It is there if you want to watch. It's like if someone's in the car with you, there's people in the back, they can actually watch it. And it's cool. It's nice. And it's a good way for me now when I want to listen to some of my own stuff. I can plug it in and do it while I'm driving. Because really, I promise, one way or another, if I got to burn down all of New York, I'm writing a book this year. See, I picked on New York. Just in case something goes awry. Just in case. But no, really, it's everything is outlined, and you know, I've had several people volunteer to help me. Karen's volunteered more than one time. And there's a lot of good people at this.
I'm trying to work on one of my own now, so I know,
that's even better. But we outlined it and everything on the one for iCloud. That's going to be an easy one. The one that we want to do about golf reads, though, is going to be a little bit harder. Because you got to get personal. See, I don't know how you do it. I know you've reviewed a lot of books. You've read a lot of books. You're going to be writing one. How do you put, I just don't know if I can put my emotions into that book like that. I can do it on the air without any problem.
Well, there you go. See, if you're a verbal kind of person, Joe, then record it. And then send it to me and I'll transcribe it for you. But seriously, you know, I have somebody who tells really funny stories about little day-to-day things that happen in her life. And I keep saying, write this stuff down. And she's like, well, when I go to write it down, I don't know, it feels weird. I said, then email me your stories. You know, every time you have a funny story, just write it down and email it to me, because she does that really well. And I said, I'll just save them, and we'll collect them, and we'll put them together.
That's a good idea. It'd probably work great, too.
Yeah, so just, you know, try writing it down as if you're writing someone a letter or sending an email with what you want to say. Or if that doesn't work, then just talk. You know, when you're in your car, just record it in like a voice recorder and email it to me.
Yeah, I think my phone has one of them now, too. Their phone's got everything now. They're great little tools. I mean, it's not going to replace my computer, mind you, but it's a great little tool.
No, and, you know, my phone came with a voice recorder, and I thought, what am I going to do with all this stuff? This has all these bells and whistles. I'm never going to use this. And I'm finding that little recorder is really handy.
Yeah, it is. Well, I've got a real micro tape recorder, too, if I want to use that, with the little clip that goes on your lapel with the little mic and stuff.
Yeah. So
I
have a transcription machine that works with those little micro tapes, so, yeah, record on those. You know, I've done transcription for other researchers. I've done a lot for Paula Harris. And, just talk into those things and send me the tapes.
Because it's a good idea. I know it works good, because when Peter sent me all in ones from him and Larry, it worked excellent for what I was doing. And that was really an experience, and I have to listen to them, too, because as far as I know, they've never even made them public anywhere.
Wow.
And
they're just amazing.
They were clowning and cutting up, and then all of a sudden you hear No, I'm serious, guys, because, you know, I know they're never going to actually make it public because of some of the stuff being said, but... they'll be cutting up, picking on each other, walking through. They're walking through Rendlesham Forest, by the way, while they're doing this. Wow. All of a sudden, you'll hear one of them, and the funny part is when you watch the voice stress meter, it's spiking because there's that much emotion in their voice when they say it. So there's no doubt whatever they're seeing to them is very real. And I mean, it's steady, and it's a good lesson. And I sent Peter everything on that and all the scores on it and all, but that was a really good thing. Now, let's see. I know you were in Open Minds just recently. And what was that? February, right? Yeah, February.
Yeah, end of February, early March.
Now, you know, I haven't been. It's its third year, isn't it? The third year since they bought it?
Yeah, I was there the first year. I was not able to go the second, but then I was there this past year.
Now, I've seen all 3 years they've had a pretty decent lineup of speakers. Mm-hmm. I've gotten really, really mixed reviews on it, so I'm going to have to go now myself just to see, because a lot of people say they really enjoyed it and they really liked it, and there was a lot of good speakers. And then a lot of people said it was too much by my book and kind of comical. And I was like, comical? Nothing I heard, because, you know, I know a couple of people who spoke there, and I know a couple of the presenters, and I mean, some of the people who put it together. So, and I had talked with Alejandro about the first one. I just couldn't see, and Marine, I really couldn't see how it was going to be comical. It just didn't add up to me.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really get an impression that it was comical. I spent a lot of time in the vendor room. I mean, you know, I was at our book table, so I was in the vendor room a lot. And there was, I mean, I was surrounded, right in front of us was a table where they were selling, like, screen-printed T-shirts and things with alien faces on them, and there was, like, thong underwear with aliens on them for some reason. So I'm sitting there looking at this display of thong underwear, like, the entire time we were there. I'm going, you know, okay.
Well, you know, but, I mean, I can see where people might say that was comical, but, you know.
Yeah.
It's
not different from really from most others. I mean, the MUFON is always very serious, but, you know, a lot of conferences, and especially, you know, the ones that call themselves festivals, especially have things like costume contests and.
That's because they're festivals.
Exactly. So yeah, you do get like little alien dolls, and they had wine there too. They had red and white wine, and it was like alien abduction wine. What the heck does that mean? You know, what is
so
that?
So if you drink it, are you going to get abducted? Hey, this could be
interesting. It was just kind of wild. But at the same time, then on the other side behind us, they had the people with the machine that would scan you and check to see if you had an implant. And, you know.
Yeah, I would get in trouble with that one, but, you know.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. But see, all of that stuff to me is legit. I mean, people, when we go. If it's a conference, you know, I'm looking for more professionalism, people dressing better, people behaving better. If it's a festival, it's just what it is. Like when we were all down to 60th and Roswell,
exactly.
That was the festival. And it
right.
was very festive atmosphere, even though they managed to put on a good underlying conference there. There was a lot of good speakers there. There was a lot of good stuff being spoke about there.
Yeah.
And so it was a really good conference. But, yes, it was very festival. It was very fun. There was a lot of people dressed up in all sorts of ways and I enjoyed it, though. I had a good time. Honestly, I thought I was going to be one of them people who bitched about it. I got to be honest, but I enjoyed it. I really did. I had a blast down there. I guess as long as you go in knowing it's a festival and you're not expecting anything more than that,
yeah,
anything else is a plus. I really like it.
Exactly. And, you know, in Roswell especially, you have to remember, I mean, there really were fantastic speakers and presenters there. And the people who put the conferences together really worked very hard at, you know, having some people come in and speak who would really present an introduction to the tourists who come. Because a lot of people go to Roswell because there's some kind of alien thing there and they don't know what.
And there's the 4th of July festival.
Yeah, and it's a tourist attraction. And it's, you know, Roswell's a small town in the middle of a desert. And, you know, their economy depends very heavily on the tourism, and their tourism has really been linked to this one event. This is the huge one. This is like, I got the impression this is the one that makes or breaks the town.
I
so,
agree.
You know, they really, they do it up big. They try to offer something for everybody. They have concerts, and they have the costume contests, and they have serious events, and, you know, and all these different things. And they also try to have introductory-level presentations for the tourists who don't know anything about it. And they also try to have what are like graduate-level presentations so that, you know, people who do know about UFOs can still come and hear something new and maybe learn something new. I mean,
yeah.
They brought me in to do the introductory workshops. I did several, like five, I think, 1 year. I did half-hour workshops just saying, why Roswell? What is it about Roswell?
Oh, my God,
the first time I did it, I had this crowd of people sitting there, and there was this one man, like, in the front row, right smack in front of me. He had his arms crossed over his chest, and he's leaned back, and he's just, like, glaring at me the whole time. And I thought,
oh, my God.
And, you know, and I was still pretty new to public speaking at that time, so I was freaking out. Every time I looked at him, I'd have to look away. God, I'm really doing an awful job. And at the end of the half hour, he came up and he shook my hand and he said, thank you so much. That was a great presentation. And I really, you know, I didn't know anything about this. I came because my wife and my kids wanted to do it. And now I really think there's something to it and I want to see everything here. And I thought, holy cow, okay, thank you.
You know, that was a good year, too. That actually helped kick the station into bigger gear, thanks to Fox and all those plus ratings they gave us, which, you know, that actually helped out. Now, you know, and to Brian in from New Mexico, no, that's not, we're not talking about the UFO Museum. They do it at the same time. And I don't know if Roswell's still doing a festival, but the museum does one every year, and it's usually going to be Yvonne Smith, Daryl Sims, Stanton Friedman, who am I missing? There's two others. But they may have some other people, but it's usually those four or five people. That matter of fact, it made a big rift because two or three of the speakers that were speaking at the museum were asked to speak at the festival that year, and for some reason, I didn't personally see what the problem was, but, you know, I wasn't into the politics of it, so I was just there.
Yeah.
I was there to cut up and have fun and speak.
Yeah, I mean, when I spoke for the city at the convention center, where exactly it was, but I went down and visited the museum, and I didn't see any problem, and during my talk, I said, while you're here, you know, check out everything here and go down to the museum and see that, and there's some great speakers down there, too. So to me, you know, I'm thinking it's this the whole town is in on this one huge event for the whole weekend, and this is really great. And, yeah, it's sad that there used to be a lot of politics going on. Now, I don't know how accurate this is because I haven't been down in the last year or two, but I heard that last year in 2012 that the crew that did the events at the museum was doing everything, that they were doing the whole thing, and so that the city organizers had been kind of cut out, I guess. And it's just such a shame that there's politicking because it really could be such a terrific, inclusive weekend for everybody.
Yeah, because the city spends money on it. I mean, I got to say, I had been to Roswell. It was my fourth trip to Roswell. The two previous times I had gone, we'd gone through doing the conference. It was nowhere near that many people in town as it was during the 60th anniversary. I mean, there just wasn't. And I don't want to hate on anybody because, you know, I like a lot of the people down at the museum. I've done work with them in the past. But, I mean, frankly, the city spent more money on advertisement. People were aware that it was going on. You know, the biggest problem all conferences have, no matter who's doing them, is letting this 320 million people in the United States, letting them all know that there is a conference going on. It's impossible.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but with Roswell, they spent, I think they had like a $15,000 or $25,000 advertisement budget, which then was pretty good. It's about equivalent to $75,000 today. So I don't.
Wow.
It was interesting. I had a lot of fun. I'm not going to lie. I'll ask Karen in a second. I'll tell you now. To me, the most professional conferences I've attended were the X conferences. It's as far as the best conference that I had the most fun at, that would have been Laughlin. but hey, I'm honest about it. I like Stephen's conferences.
Yeah.
They're very professional. But what do you think?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, the X conferences are very, very ultra professional. Everything is very high end. The one thing I didn't care for about the X conferences, and it's purely personal preference, is that Steve Bassett in the beginning set up these amazing conferences, got these fantastic speakers, and set them up so that they were speaking.
Oh,
like
I hate it. Oh, when he did the triple and double V. Oh, God, I hated that.
Different tracks. So, you know, at any one time there were like three speakers speaking and you had to sort of choose who you wanted to hear. And it was cool. And I asked him about it and he said, well, yeah, I want people to want to come back. I want them to feel like, okay, I got this and I got this, but I didn't get a chance to hear that guy, so I got to come back again.
Well, the first year he ran three tracks, right? I mean, bam.
Yes. And it was incredible. And I cannot believe that anybody could manage that. I mean, his organizational abilities alone was just amazing.
He never stops to hold.
Oh, I know. He's just got so much energy. And, you know, what blows me away about Stephen Bassett, though, is just his ability to speak so well on a moment's notice. I was at some conference, I think it might have been one of the MUFON international ones, and the keynote speaker was delayed or couldn't come at the last minute. I don't know if they were ill or had some travel thing going on. But they discovered, like, 2 hours before the keynote speech was supposed to happen that the speaker wasn't able to come. And so they're thinking, oh, great, what are we going to do? Hey, Steve Bassett's here. You know, so they asked him if he would speak, and he's like, yeah, sure. And he spent a little while with his laptop. I mean, he worked really hard, but he looked so relaxed about it. I didn't even realize at first that that's what he was doing. And that night, he gave the most amazing talk. And I would have sworn that he'd spent 2 weeks working on it if I hadn't known that they just asked him that day.
Oh, yeah, I imagine he could speak anywhere.
Oh, it was wonderful. It was so just insightful, and he was talking about the dedication of the ufologists, and he was telling this story about, like, building bricks from straw, and that's what most ufologists have to do. You know, we have so little to go on and so little help and resources, but we still do it. And we, you know, we're building this structure no matter what. And it was just incredible, and it was inspiring. And, like, I was proud to be in the field after I listened to him talk.
Oh, I know. He's he does have a tendency to inspire people. He's a lot of fun. He's high energy person. I don't know where he gets the energy from.
I don't know. I wish I had half of that.
But then he did that second year, and you know, I don't mind when they do lecture lectures and workshops. Because then, to me, you know, sometimes I want to go to lectures, sometimes I like to go to workshops, because it depends what's going on. So I actually like when they do that, but I don't like when they put speakers up against each other, because frankly, there's only maybe six speakers in the field that if you unfortunately have to speak against one of them, you're only going to have five people listening to you.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, and that's just how it is. You know, there's certain people that are just going to draw the crowd no matter what. And there are a few of them that, like me, that get lucky because I'm freaking insane. That I'm gonna get people listen to me no matter what, and but that's just because I'm insane. But the rest of people really got to work really hard, and I don't know. Like, so I hate when they do that, because then I kind of feel bad for the person that is someone like Stanton Friedman. Really, come on.
Yeah, now, I mean, there are certain big names that, you know, if this guy's speaking, everybody's gonna want to go hear him.
Yep,
you know, and yeah, you don't want to be the person opposite that guy.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like Grant Cameron, do you really want to be the guy speaking against Grant? I mean, come on.
No.
Grant just speaks, and Grant's another one of them one that just can speak just without even thinking about it. I'm like,
yeah.
I give him hell about that all the time. I say, Grant, you're the only person that can talk more than I do. He told me on the air, he said, I don't know if that's a compliment or not. I'm like, that's just evil. Now, I mean, were you speaking when you went down to Open Minds? I don't know why I can't remember the name. It is
recently.
Yeah.
I actually just visited that one. I worked at our book table. You know, I was at the Keyhole Publishing table. But I also had a chance to visit some friends and just visit with some of the Open Minds crew, who are friends now. And other people who were attending the conference that I never get to see because I'm way out in the middle of nowhere in Rochester. So,
yeah,
and, you know, getting out of Rochester and going to Phoenix in February is a really, really nice thing to be able to do.
Well, where does Alejandro go? I haven't seen him around lately. I know everybody kept telling me he left.
He was there. He's back with Open Minds because he was.
See, that's what I thought.
Yeah, I didn't get much chance to talk to him. It's kind of, you know, hi, how you doing, and he was working at the conference, so that was about all we had time for.
I haven't given him hell in a while. Every now and then I like to give him some hell, but now he don't do media director for MUFON. That's why I used to give him hell, but
yeah,
and then he's not. We still any of their shows, they podcast, we still carry on the station. I just don't think they carry him live anymore because of the time thing. Now, and you're going to be down at Paula Harris's conference. What in 2 weeks, huh?
A couple of weeks, yeah. Actually, on May 4th, I'm going to be speaking for the Pennsylvania MUFON group at the Erie, Pennsylvania conference, the Erie Paranormal Conference, which is to be held in Erie, Pennsylvania. So that's kind of cool. And then the following week, skipping right past half the year here, May 10th through 12th. I will be in Florida for Paula's conference, the StarWorks conference.
Yeah, you know, by the way, to the person who just wrote in, said that Karen's pronouncing Paula's name funny. No, that's actually the way you're supposed to pronounce it.
She's not Paula. She's not. Paola. She's Italian. It's Paola.
Yes, and I get in trouble with her all the time over that. She tells me, you should know how to pronounce my name. I said, I do. I just forget sometimes.
It's
No, I have a friend named Paula, and I have one named Paola. And yeah, yes, it is different.
It is different, and she is pronouncing it correctly. So just in case, yeah. I know somebody when they I seen that come in. Oh, y'all thought she was crazy to drive through a blizzard, the blizzard to go to a conference? Trust me, if it's a good conference, it's worth it. If it's a good conference, it's worth it. Y'all don't understand for us, you know, it's a little different for people like Karen and I because we have a lot of friends that speak at these conferences. And even a lot of people attending are friends. And it's you know, it's more for me, the conference, I got to be honest, okay, there's not much I'm going to learn at a conference. Because frankly, I know most of these people and I'm hearing about their work anyway, either from them or other people. So I can be honest, there's not much I'm going to hear new at a conference, but I don't go for that. I go sometimes to interview people, but mainly just to show my face and to chit chat. Cause I got to be honest with y'all. Some of the best conferences, some of the best conversations you will ever have will be at the dinner table or at the bar.
Yeah.
Or at one of the private parties. You know, it's, and frankly, you're going to hear stuff there you just probably will never hear anywhere else. So it's worth it.
Yeah, you hear the good stuff that doesn't make it into the official presentations, too.
Yes.
I mean, you're right. When I go, I almost never hear any of the official talks anymore. I think I caught off of one while I was in Phoenix. But I got to schmooze with almost all the speakers in the book, in the vendor room, you know, just sitting at my book table. People would always stop by and say hello. And, you know, we'd hear about the new research or anything over dinner. So anything that was new that they were presenting, you're right, we'd hear about it over the dinner table or in the bar.
And it's just the way it is, and I enjoy that. I have a good time when I go. I got to say, I there's been some conferences I thought were cheesy, I'm not going to lie, but I can honestly say I've never gone to a conference where I didn't have a good time.
Yeah,
I really did.
And, you know, if nothing else, it's spending even one day in a room full of people who don't roll their eyes when you talk about things that are very important and interesting to you.
Yeah,
and I love that.
Yeah, I do, too. And it gives me a chance to bounce theories or ideas or things that I'm working on for the organization. I can bounce them off. And you know what's funny, guys? There's stuff that I've talked with several big-name ufologists about that they could have easily snatched up for their own because they write and all. And all of them were very honest with me and said, hey, Joe, I think you should do this. You see, it's like the Betty and Barney Hill thing. I got there was such a split in the field when I introduced it. It was very interesting. Now I got more on my side now. I've been working it. I've been being evil. But really, it gives me an opportunity to just bounce stuff off. And I like to see their reactions, like when we were doing, I think it was the blood type study I was talking with two, I'm not going to mention the names, but when I bounced, they looked and they said, really? And then when I told them about, you know, South America and Central America being 99%, they were like, really? I said, yeah, and that's nothing to do with the aliens. That's just genetics on our planet. I said, that was a scientist figured that one out. And I said, I just thought it was interesting that, you know, we've got, you know, the Nazcan lines down there, the Toltecs, the Mayans, the Incans, the Aztecs, all of them worshiping these sky gods and stuff. I said, I just find it interesting that, you know, they happen to be all one blood type, which is just still strange to me.
That's bizarre.
It is. It's weird. And it is something that's, we are working on putting that out pretty soon, too. But I'll save that for when I'm on someone else's show, or maybe if I do a coast or something like that, we'll save it for that. I don't know. What are you going to be speaking about when you're down in it's not Miami. Where is it again? I keep wanting to say Miami.
No, it's in Sebring, Florida.
Where the hell is that? I'm going to look that up.
Kind of in the middle.
In the middle? Oh, okay. Well, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be really nice. I mean, my family used to go down to Florida for vacations all the time when I was a kid, and I can't remember the last time I was in Florida. So this is going to be really nice being down there. Paola actually suggested a topic for me, and it was really interesting. My first thought was, wait, what? You know, I've never really done that before. But then I thought, hey, this would be a really cool time to do some new research. She gave me the title just as a suggestion, The Life of a Contactee. And I thought, wow, this is kind of intriguing. So I've been talking to people, and actually, Joe, you're one of the people I ought to be talking to.
I tell you what I'll do for you. I'll have to get you to sign a piece of paper for me, but I'll give you access to one of my emails that we use. Matter of fact, Christina Knowles, if y'all know who she is, she's our Massachusetts State Director. She's working on a project with her and Jim McConnell. They're working on a project for TV videos and stuff. And they said they needed some contactees. So I said, well, here, take this email, because she's under a non-disclosure agreement. I said, here, take this email, and I see what you can find. Write to these people and see if they're interested. There was about 125 cases in that particular email. She was like, really? I'm like, yeah, just help yourself.
Wow.
See, it's different for us because we're not like some of the other people in the field. You know, not to pick on any of my fellow abduction researchers because most of the ones are good friends of mine and all hardworking. They just, you know, most of them won't even see 125 cases in a lifetime. And we've got that many just sitting in an email that hadn't been answered yet.
Oh, my gosh.
And then there's another, you know, and there's probably 300 or 400 sitting on the old ICAR site right now that, you know, I tell people, be patient because we do get a lot of email these days, and it does take us time to get back. People get mad at me. It takes 3 hours. I said, man, I said, sometimes it's going to take you 6 months to get investigated. Sometimes it may take longer than that if you're giving us information that's sketchy. You know, something that's not going to jump out and grab one of the investigators by the throat and say, hey, look at me. What the hell's going on here?
Yeah.
But well, I'll talk to you about that because there's lots of stuff that you can pick up from there. It's so what you're going to be down there, was it 3 days or 2 days at the one in it's Starworks, right?
Yeah, Starworks. And Paula started this last year, actually. She invited me to come down for the first one that was in Glen Rose, Texas.
Texas, yeah.
And I wasn't able to get down there for that one, but I said, absolutely, you know, if this goes well and you do another one, let me know, and I'll definitely be at the second one. And
I had a lot
did.
Of
she
fun
decided
there.
To put a second one on. Oh, you got to go to the first one.
Yes, please. I'm the only guy that got a picture with all the women, just me and all of them. Oh, yeah, all the ladies in red. Yeah, it's still up on the internet. It's I got all
We're wearing blue this year, apparently. I've been told to get a blue dress.
Yeah, I got all kind of BS about that. Oh, how did you get that picture? I said, well, I went down. I didn't go down to speak. I didn't even go down to work press. I just went down because I wanted to hear the Glen Rose, Texas sightings from the people. Because what they did was is they drove us out to where it happened in the middle of the woods, in the middle of the night, lit up a bonfire, broke out the beer, and told the story. And I had an audio and video tape while we were there, but it was much more interesting listening to that. And by the way, while all this was going on, I sent a copy of this to a friend of mine who works security. She's a scientist at Lockheed Martin.
Oh.
And I sent her a copy of it. And the whole thing, and she sent me back something else, which we're not going to talk about that tonight either, but that's when the... and because I don't want to talk about that, because I want to talk to Karen, and we keep getting off on other subjects, and that is stuff that we'll talk about in the near future. It's it was something about he described the engines, eight rows, and then when while it was cruising, it was glowing red, but when it took off, it was glowing white. She liked to flip when she seen that. She knew exactly what it was. She also even told me, I guarantee you there was chase planes present. As she was texting it back to me, the guy was actually saying there was two chase planes with it. And I had never heard that before. I had never, ever heard there were chase planes with the Stevensville sighting until I met the witnesses myself. And matter of fact, by listening to them, that's another thing I don't like about the Internet while we're on this. Somehow or another, this was a pretty straightforward story. I mean, these two guys told us very straightforward. Yeah, they sounded very honest to me, and they seemed to be very straightforward in the way they were said it. Well, I heard all kind of stuff I've never heard on any of the radio shows or anything else, and I was like, what the hell? I thought I was on the wrong sighting or something. I got to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
It was just weird, and there was a bunch of stuff there that, frankly, I hadn't heard anywhere else, and it really changed my view on the case, and it also made me lose a little respect for some of the investigators thinking, wait a minute, guys, you've got chase planes, you've got things with bolts, not bolts, but with rivets on it. I'm thinking, why did y'all instantly think this was alien? So I got to be honest with you, I don't think the Stevensville was anything alien. It may have been based on alien technology, but I think it was ours. And from everybody I've talked to, said the same thing.
Well, they talked about it being really huge, like blotting out the whole sky, and that was the thing that made me think this doesn't sound like anything we have. But
that's what made me think that too.
So we have crafts that are that big, or
well,
why that's that low?
When he was describing it, he described it as maybe 50 to 75 feet long, probably 75 feet, maybe 100 feet across. Now that's not as big as we've got stuff flying bigger than that now. We got super tankers bigger than that. Those C-130s are big as that is. I think a B-52 might be that big.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like, But the reason why I think it got described the way it did is because it was low down, so it probably looked massive. And they were up on top of a hill overlooking the valley around them. So this thing probably was already low. With them being up high, it probably came very close. I would say, from the way they described it, less than 100 feet above them. And it was just putting along, you know, just cruising at a steady pace. It wasn't zipping or anything like that. It was just going. And it was just, you know, so when he described it and he started talking about Ribbits, I was like, oh, wait a minute. Now, I've never heard Ribbits on any other spacecraft. Not to rule it out, but I don't think Ribbits can handle deep space speeds, guys. Let's be honest mm-hmm. about that. So I was surprised by that. And then when he described the engines as eight rows, and then the colors, that was also another good giveaway. And then there was two chase planes. And they weren't chasing it, they were on side of it. Like you see when the shuttle comes in, one shadows on one, hangs back on the right, one pulls up on the left. That's how they describe them. This is typical standard procedure with anything new flying in the sky. And come to find out, they crossed through three non-fly zones to get to where they were and was headed to another one. So this thing even knew where aircraft were restricted. It was flying in those zones. And we didn't scramble anything to go look. It was really suspicious, but you can't rule anything out. It was just interesting. But when I got the email back with the picture, and I showed I forgot his name, the picture of it, he said it looked almost identical to that, and she said that was definitely a version of the Aurora. She said it's not the Aurora because they've actually gone to something different since then. But she said it would be considered like a cousin of it. And so I was just kind of like, okay, well, that's cool. To me, that's a solved case. Move on. I wasn't going to make a big deal out of argue, but in my head, it's done, over with, time to move on. And there was no abductions. Current, I asked when I was in town, I asked around if anybody had heard anybody, any alien abductions or anything in that area that would be considered an abduction. That was pretty much a nothing. But then again, hey, maybe ET's living here now and they got to build what they got to build with here. Who knows?
Yeah, that's true. Maybe that was a craft that they only used for short local flights. It was like the Geo Metro of the UFOs.
Well, send me a copy of the one you do when you're down in Florida, because that's down there up my alley. I definitely want to hear that one. Oh, paranormal. Karen's a witch. Y'all didn't know that? No,
yeah.
I didn't say the B word. I said the W word. Hard-ass comment that just came up.
I'm proud of it. I'm not seeing the same comments that you are. I'm looking in the Pell Talk.
Oh, no, I've got my Facebook and my emails open.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I ignore the room now because it always gets me in trouble because they know when I'm reading it, so then they're posting all kind of crap up in there. Yeah. So I don't.
I always keep one eye on the chat room. A lot of times I get questions from my guests through the chat room, and, you know, I love getting interaction from my listeners. I really, really get a kick out of that when it's more than just me talking to whoever I'm interviewing. You know, I love doing the interviews, but it's 10 times more fun when people in the chat room start asking questions, too.
Oh, yeah, the chat room can be a great tool when they're on topic and, you know, hanging out and listening to it. And I know when I do a lot of stuff, when I'm doing stuff where I'm just talking about specific topics by myself, it's nice to have them in there because they'll start asking all kind of questions. When we do like the grays or reptilians or human type aliens, instantly there'll be 50-80 questions in the whole show by itself. So it makes for much more informative shows. They get to learn a lot, and it makes it easier on me. I usually set up a guideline for those kind of shows, you know, just so I don't go off on a rant, but most of the time I don't need it. They kind of pick the guideline, and that's where we're going.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, they're like, well, you said we're going to talk about this, and then here comes the questions.
Yeah.
And you cool. know, you answer questions. You know, one question sometimes could be 8 seconds or 5 minutes.
Exactly. Yeah, sometimes you can get a whole show out of it, you know, if it's something that people are interested in and it leads to more questions. It's always fun. Was there a question about me?
Yeah, well, somebody had, well, that was the question. I heard Karen was a witch, and what kind of witch was she? And then they put some kind of happy face and put the B word behind it.
I can be that.
everybody can be that. Well, no, y'all, I don't know what kind of witch she is. No, I don't think she kind of flies around on brooms, so.
Gardnerian Wicca, actually.
Wicca, y'all hear that?
Yeah.
And then, wait, say it, what did you call it again?
Well, the first one is, there are different kinds of Wicca, and the one that follow most closely, and it, you know, kind of loosely based on this tradition, is the Gardnerian one, which is based on Gerald Gardner, who was an Englishman in the last century who really did a lot. He was actually like a sociologist, and he did a lot of research into the Wiccan traditions, and he called it the old religion. I don't think he called it Wicca. But he, like, searched out the folk customs in England and tried to sort of pull them together into a coherent system. And then he taught it to other people. And then it sort of spread, you know, through England and then came over here. And when I was first introduced to it, I came across a book in our local library in this very, very small town, very white bread town. I don't know how they got this. I have no idea how they got this book in my library. But it was a book written by a man in England who had trained, you know, in that tradition. And when I read it, it just so appealed to me. And it wasn't like learning something new. It was like it all just made sense. Like I already knew all of that, you know, and it just kind of put everything in order for me. And so, yeah, if I had to say what kind of Wicca do, yeah, I would say Gardnerian because that's the closest. But, you know, one of the nice things about Wicca is just it is what it is, and it's really intensely personal.
Yeah,
I think everybody's spiritual path is intensely personal. And one of the things that I like most about it is I can respect other people's religions as long as they're not hurting somebody. You know, the Westboro Baptist Church does not qualify. They're just nasty people. That's not a religion. But, you know, somebody can be Wiccan or Hindu or Muslim, and I don't care. You know, I have friends who are Christian. I have friends who are a million other things, and it doesn't matter. And I think it's very cool that we can talk and we can learn from each other.
Well, I got a new thing now. No more gun control until we ban Muslims. Yes, I said that. Actually, I said until we ban Islam. I don't hear nothing about gun control until, if we're going to ban guns, I want Islam banned too. Because, look, if we're going to talk about killing people, they kill as many as our damn guns do. And then for that, if we can really get into that, you might as well ban the Catholics while you're at it. So let's just start along a flat level line here. Oh, no, I like to pick on them.
Hey, you know, from the point of view of the witches, I mean, let's look back and who's killed more people? Pagans don't, because we respect everybody. And we've been pushed around a lot, and the Christians are usually the ones doing it.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. We bitch about Islam, but Christianity started this. Now, maybe they've calmed down for right now, but, you know, hey, who knows in 100 years from now or 50 years from now. But frankly, all those religions aggravate. They just, all of them do. They really do. And anybody who's going to kill in anybody's God's name, frankly, to me, just that's enough in itself to say, okay, enough of y'all. Get out of here. Go. Why, you know what? We could do this, Sean. Instead of having, like, Russia and China and America, we could have no organized religion country, and then we could have, like, the Catholic country, like Europe. Or, you know, the Middle East, which is now seems to be turning into Muslim. So we could have like that, guys, and then all of us would be much happier. Because, really, I get tired of being beat up by the religious people. Gets on my nerves.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, what's really frustrating is you look at the Ten Commandments and think how many people – I mean, I was brought up as a Roman Catholic. You know,
so
before I saw this book on Wicca, I was Roman Catholic, pure, you know, very ritual, very big on the Bible. And I understand about the Ten Commandments. And I'm looking all around at all these people I've met throughout my life, right up to a couple of days ago, people who call themselves good Christians, and they do things that I wouldn't dream of doing.
I
don't call myself a good Christian at all. And I want to say, you know, I just try to be a nice person. Okay, I try to look at other people and say, I don't know what they're going through. And people put out on Facebook, you know, everybody's struggling with something. And that is so good to remember because I always forget that. And I have days when, I'm frustrated and I'm tired and I'm angry. And I just have to remember that the person I'm talking to or the person I sit next to on the bus might be having a much worse day than I am. But they're just not spouting it all over me.
It's true,
and,
too.
And, you know, my day job is in a medical office, and I just think everybody who comes in, I think whatever kind of bad day I'm having, I didn't have the kind of day where I need to go to my doctor. So right off the bat, you're having a worse day than I am. I can do something to be nice and to try to cheer you up and try to make this experience here as possible. Now, I mean, I can't treat patients, but I can do what I can to make it more pleasant.
But, you know, this is something I used to preach to my friends when I was really young. They didn't realize, no matter what kind of job you worked, especially if you're in the public, that you do make a big difference. Because one little convenience store clerk at 8 o'clock in the morning, you walk into her store, you want your cup of coffee, whatever, you're being cranky, so she gets pissy, you leave the store really mad. So pretty much everybody you address for the rest of that day, you're going to probably piss off, or at least make them feel bad. But in the same aspect, if she's all bubbly and happy and she gets you smiling, giddy when you leave, you're going to be like that to everybody else you meet. It's kind of like a virus that just spreads out and goes. And people don't realize how much power they have, especially people who work in the public. They're starting to figure it out now, like, because the companies like McDonald's are starting to have so much problem with service. But it's really true, people. I mean, you can really make a big difference every day if you really want to. You know, I don't work as much in the public as I used to, so I don't have to be as nice as I used to be. But still, it does make a difference. Customers will tell me when they used to come in my stores, oh, you're just so happy and bubbly in the morning. Yeah, they didn't know I wanted to choke somebody. But, hey, when they left, they wild, and that's all that mattered to me.
And someday, you know, it seems like such a little thing, but you're right, it spreads. It's like a ripple in a pond, and it can become huge. And it can be a tiny effort for you, and it turns into this enormous effect on the whole world. It's such an easy thing to do.
And it is, and I've heard some great authors. I've even heard some politicians and even actors and all talk about a particular person, something just out of blue, just an act of kindness out of blue, changed their lives. And because some people sometimes will be having a really, really bad day thinking humanity is just a load of you-know-what, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, somebody just with a random act of kindness, and you're like, wow, really? There are still good people left. Damn. Shut up. You ain't got that bad. And it's part of life.
I don't see why people are so surprised at the stories about people being nice to each other. You know, we really shouldn't be. But when you look at the news, or when you look at Facebook or even the Internet news, much less Fox News or MSNBC, I mean, all they ever want to talk about is, oh, this guy blew up that guy. Oh, this, you know, the economy's going down the toilet. Oh, this is so bad. This is awful.
Well, it,
and
it's
just,
true.
Honestly, well, yes, all these happening, that's fine. But you know what? Good things happen, too. And I'm really, that's one of my addictions to Facebook, is I keep seeing all these news stories that people find and they post about, you know, 10 people stopped what they were doing in the middle of a day to rescue some ducklings that fell through a storm grate. You know, I love that.
See, what we do,
repost, I'm like, yeah, people are nice.
Yeah. Well, that's what we do when we do news. On the flip side, we start out most of the time with pretty hardcore news. But as the show goes on, we try to leave the last hour, you know, make it much more relaxed. And we always try to end the show on a good note. We really want people to leave the show understanding the issues we were talking about early on, because they're important. But not leaving mad, because, you know, a lot of these shows I watch, like one particular crazy woman on MSNBC, every time I see her, I'm pissed off after I watch her. And not just her, there's a couple of people on CNN and Fox that if I watch them, I literally, when I leave the TV, I'm mad. And I don't want to do that. I don't, you know, that just irritates me, so I just don't even watch them anymore. So I'll read the damn news and think what I want to think about it.
Yeah.
Since most of the news. Now, you seen that special, Karen? They got MSNBC only does 15% real news now, 85%. True, by the way. This is true. 85%. Fox does 45% real news and 55% commentary. CNN was doing 55% real news and 45% commentary, but they say because Fox is growing so fast and the top 10 shows all belong to Fox that they changed their format now to 45-55. But at least those two are still doing almost 50% real news. Everybody else, once you leave those two networks, with the exception of BBC, which is 75-25, everybody else is only doing like 20% real news, and everything else is people bitching and commentary. And I'm thinking, you know, I want to hear opinions, but I really want to hear the news first, because so I can kind of formulate my own opinion. You know, I don't need some crazy person like Rush screaming at me saying, oh, well, this is what you got to believe. No, 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 no. tell me the news, and then I'll decide what I got to believe, and then maybe I'll come back and listen to you. Maybe I won't. But it just gets old. And, you know, I've seen Karma posting about, yeah, there's a lot of sissies. The country's becoming sissified. What can I say?
Yeah.
It is. But
well, we're being told to be afraid, and we're being, you know, these things happen, and I don't know if we want to get into discussing the Boston bomber. I kind of don't really want to, but, you know, we can. When this happened, I remember coming home from work that day, and I heard about it. And so I turned on the TV because I wanted to see what the official story was and not what really happened. I wanted to hear what they were telling us about it. And I was just sitting there feeling like, feeling sick to my stomach and thinking this is 9/11. Because they had this one little piece of footage with the actual explosion that they just kept running over and over and over and over. And it was like, did you see it? Are you scared enough? You want to see it again? Want to get scared? Are you scared now? Want to see it again? And I thought, God almighty, you know, I saw it. Okay.
Yeah, that was
scared. Funny. Good enough.
Thank you. That's enough. And it's another one, and I'm with you. I don't really want to talk about it, but it's another one that's going to be, I mean, half of what they originally said has turned out to be something else, and that is a bunch of other BS I'm hearing about. So I don't understand why everything can't be straightforward. I just don't understand that.
Well, right. When you talk about these different stations reporting so much real news and then so much commentary, I mean, that would be okay on the one hand to get so much commentary if they were reasonable and logical and fair and discussing the facts.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
the
but
facts.
It's essentially somebody screaming at us, you know, be afraid, be afraid, be afraid. Be afraid of anybody who doesn't look like you. Oh, the Muslims must have done this. There was some Middle Eastern guy. You know, that must have been it. The very first day they were saying they had a guy in custody. He was Middle Eastern. They said he was behaving suspiciously. And eventually they said he was running away from the blast. And I'm thinking, so is freaking everybody else there.
Yeah, no, everybody was.
I'm running away from it. I'm sorry. How is that suspicious?
Well, I'm beginning to really wonder anyway. They originally arrested the wrong person. And then, guys, they arrested that poor Elvis impersonator, and then they had to turn him loose because he ain't the guy who did it. I mean, when I listened to the news, and I got to be honest with you, I mean, from what I heard on every news station, this guy did it, no doubt. He was going to prison, going away for life. And then all of a sudden, I turn on the TV, and, oh, we've got to release him. I'm like, what, huh? This guy just tried to poison the president, we got to release him? Wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute.
Yeah.
It's like our government cannot tell the truth for anything. God help the UFO people, because they can't even tell the truth now about regular everyday news.
Oh, I know. I know. Nobody's relying on anybody who's in power. I mean, the whole thing is they'll never release the truth about UFO, because that's admitting that everyone who's in this power structure for generations has been lying.
Yeah, everybody.
And the whole structure is going to fall apart because you completely destroy, I mean, we pretty much destroyed the faith in the American political system right now. They've destroyed it themselves. We don't believe anything that comes out of the government anymore. And it's not just us, the ufologists. I mean, we're seeing it more and more on Facebook after the bombing event and the Ryson letters and, you know, just the bombing event, the story has changed so many times.
I know.
You know, and I just put a post up on Facebook the other day. I was reading more and more news stories about that were different from before.
Oh, yeah.
And I just started writing, you know, okay, first day I heard this, then they said this, then the next day they changed it to this. And I'm like, get your story straight, people. And last time I checked, that had like 55 likes and 27 shares. And, I mean, for me, that's huge. My stuff doesn't get shared like that. So, I mean, a lot of people agree with me that the official stories are just, there are too many discrepancies, and they're flip-flopping, and if you say, hey, wait a minute, that doesn't match what you said yesterday, they say, well, you know, you're spreading propaganda, and you're being unpatriotic, and you're not you're disrespecting the victims, and you shouldn't be asking any questions. I'm like, wait a minute, how is it disrespectful to want to know who really killed people?
Oh, no,
I don't understand that.
I just, you know, when the first time they showed the two kids walking, I was like, okay, that doesn't look right. And then they showed the bomb on the ground, and I'm thinking, well, there's not a knapsack on it. What the hell?
Yeah.
And then after that, Karen, I actually said, you know what, I'm not watching this anymore because I'm just going to get furiously mad about all of this. And frankly, I just the more I hear about these two guys, the more I'm like, what the hell went on here? Mm-hmm. You know, I have, by the way, to the person who just sent me that instant message, I have no idea what went on there. I'm not even trying to even come up with a theory, to be honest with you. But I can tell you this.
On Facebook, too, when I say, hey, there's a discrepancy, you know, here's a picture of this guy, the suspect, walking with his backpack, which is like gray and white, and here's a picture of the backpack that had the bomb in it, and it's all shredded, and you can see that it was black.
So it's
not the same backpack. Hello, people. And people start attacking me. This one guy in particular says, oh, my God, well, you shouldn't be talking about politics because you don't know. And how come you're even talking about this? And da 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 da. And I said,
I'm smarter than you,
moron. I don't have to know about politics. I know the difference between gray and black. Look at it. You know, and then one guy, my personal favorite, this one guy, after we went back and forth for a while, and he's like, well, fine then, who did it? I said, I don't know. It happened 3 days ago. I don't have all the answers. All I'm saying is there are discrepancies in the story. That's it. He's like, well, you tell me who did it then. And then he gets mad at me because I wouldn't answer his questions. And he said, well, out of respect for Richard Dolan, I'm not going to discuss this with you anymore.
I'm surprised you just didn't rip him, girl.
I said, out of respect for my friend and colleague, Richard Dolan. And I'm thinking, you tell me, I mean, you're trying to impress me with being close to him. I've been married to the guy for 20 years. Okay, let's talk about who's close to Richard Dolan. I mean, seriously. And what does that have to do with anything? And I told Rich, and he's like, oh, my God, he said what? Oh, my God, I can't believe it. Yeah, he did.
Oh, Lord.
So then the next day comes on, and he starts ribbing me again about this. He's like, oh, well, Karen, you got this wrong and this wrong. And I said, hey, I thought you weren't going to talk to me about this. And I haven't heard.
No, he can't have it. Oh, Lord. People are nuts.
Just do not do that.
Whoever you are, you lucky she just didn't rip you up and down the road, buddy. Y'all, you just got lucky, as I can say.
I went for years without ever blocking people on Facebook, and I've been doing a lot this week because people pull crap like that. I don't have time for this.
I seen John Greenwald post something about where's the evidence or so. Oh, Lord, you'd have thought he was committing a crime or something. They just tore him up and down all over the place. I was like, okay, people.
Where is the evidence?
Yeah, well, I'm with that. That's what I posted underneath it. I said, well, where is the evidence? I said, I'm not. You know, show me something that convinces me. I said, I'm not saying any government did it or anything else. I said, I said, there's some discrepancies, and I would like them answered.
Exactly. And since when do we have to shut down an entire city and declare martial law, do house-to-house searches?
Here y'all go.
Kid, I mean, seriously.
Do these guys know how to do that? This was idiot. I think they wanted to test something out new up there because they closed down the city and then they cut the internet and telephones service. So it was like they were secure in the area. But to make the long story short, just today in Hammond, Louisiana, they caught a guy who shot somebody's mother in the house, right? They didn't close down the whole city. It did take them like 34 hours to find the kid. And they did find him by accident, by the way, just like in Boston when somebody reported him. But they didn't close down the whole town and make it come to a screeching halt to find this kid. And I can't personally believe any kid with 5 gunshot wounds could evade 9,000 cops. Exactly.
With all that, just follow the freaking blood trail. I mean, come on. And I saw photos of him climbing out of the boat after he was supposedly shot himself in the neck. I mean, come on.
The whole thing stinks.
Yeah, I don't even know where to begin with this.
Well, it was funny because I heard the cop saying, well, the 19-year-old fled on foot. And I'm like, okay, well, how did he run over his brother if he fled on foot? What the hell? What did I miss here? And then I seen some of the witnesses on the street who have been posting videos and things said that ain't how it happened. So now I'm like, oh, shit. So I've been trying to ignore it. I'll save it because, you know, it's hard because it's hard to stay away from it.
Well, now people post things on my page, and then I'm like, oh, that's another good piece of evidence. You know, for example, there was a story the other day, official news story, that was saying, oh, these two suspects were known to the FBI. They'd been trailed for years. And just yesterday, I saw somebody posted on my page and said, wait a minute, then why did the FBI post photos of the two suspects and say they needed help identifying them? Yeah, if they were known to the FBI, and they had been for years, if you had a photo of two suspects, would you not run it through your own database first?
Well, this is what I figure. Whoever was running the FBI investigation, because from what I was told by a pretty reliable source 3 years ago, and Linda confirmed that by hearing on the news, and then a good friend of mine was telling me about the Israelis that told them 6 months ago. So they've been told by the Russians and the Israelis twice. So somehow or another, the FBI drops the ball completely. And wait. And on top of all of that, someone planted a bomb on the finish line, and no one noticed. Now, I got to be honest with you. I live in New Orleans, and there's a lot of people come down here, 3, 4 million, sometimes 5 million people from Mardi Gras. And our cops have this thing they do. They walk up and down the streets and up and down the mediums to see what's setting out there, because there's a lot of ice chests and coolers and stuff like that. So they're actually walking and looking as they walk past stuff to identify anywhere that there's going to be politicians or movie stars or any big groups or clusters of people, like where the mayor speaks. They double up the cops, and they push everyone away with gates, and then they keep circling the area to make sure nothing's set on the streets. So Boston's about twice the size of the city of New Orleans, what about three times the police department, but yet can't manage to even do that.
Yeah.
I was, frankly, whoever their police chief is should be canned. Whoever he is should be canned, plain and simple. He should have been canned day one. And whoever ran the FBI investigation should also be canned. Oh, wait, who's joining us there, caller? Who's that?
Hey, what's up, Joe?
Hey, Karen. Hey, it's Jason. What's up, eh?
Hey.
Hey. Oh, and Karen, like I said in the room earlier, I really got to give you credit. It seems like apparently there's me, there's a couple of other people, and there's you who seem to be a little bit upset that America is acting like a bunch of sissies because something happened where four people died. I mean,
yeah.
I went off on this on News on the Flip Side last Saturday for a little while, but I think I was a little bit too upset and my argument didn't come out as coherent as I wanted it to, because, I mean, my God, like, especially this whole thing, you've got an entire city... I read an article about it, and I was already thinking this, and it made good sense. You've got somebody here that spent a couple of $100s on explosives and killed a minor amount of people. Well, this guy just took $250, you know, less than pipe bombs, more or less, and he shut down an entire city for a day. There are estimates that shutting down Boston for a day cost $1 billion. I mean, I'd say that's one hell of a good investment on your return.
But think about it. It's the lesson they just taught every little up-and-coming terrorist. Oh, look, one idiot with a bomb can stop a whole city. So if y'all live in places like New York or Philadelphia or maybe Los Angeles, I would be thinking about attending any public events.
Because
all this did was teach every upcoming terrorist, well, look at this. One little bomb and they shut down the whole city.
Oh,
19-year-old wounded kid.
I mean, they're trying to do red steer, and they're trying to break up communities.
Wait,
I'm sorry, I was talking right over you, and I don't know.
Well, y'all were stepping on each other. I don't think y'all could hear each other.
Yeah.
Karen, finish what you were saying.
Hey, go ahead, Karen.
Yeah.
Well, no, I think part of the reason, I don't know who was behind the actual initial bombing, okay? Maybe it was a total inside job right from square one, or maybe some guy did it, and then, you know, the Boston government or the federal government stepped in and used it. But I think they're trying to split everybody. They're trying to break up communities and make us afraid to go out in public and meet our neighbors and spend time with our neighbors, because this is happening more and more. You know, you get things like the Boston Marathon, where you get people just coming out in the street, having a nice day, being with each other, and now everybody's afraid to do that.
Exactly, Karen. That's what I wanted to talk about. And this is what really upset me, is immediately after, and it's like the next day, I'm watching some of the coverage on the mainstream media. You know, I'm flipping back and forth between CNN, Fox, NBC to see what's going on. And they all ran stories at about the same time about the new trend of cocooning. And they bring on their newscasters, and they tell you that it's okay for, well, first off, they interview a bunch of people from, like, New York, L.A., you know, all their little branch offices and everything, and they're like, well, what's your reaction to this? And they show a bunch of people getting there in front of the camera. It's like, I'm so scared. I'm afraid to go out in public, and I'm afraid it's going to be me next time. It's like, okay, look, you know, you're more statistically... likely to win the lottery or be killed by lightning than you are to be injured or killed in a terrorist attack. But they talk about this cocooning, bringing on all these people, saying how scared they are, and they just want to cower in their homes in fear, and then they bring on the psychologists that sit there and explain to you why it's okay for you to feel like this, and why you should want a cocoon, and why that's a normal expectation. And I was like, Jesus Christ, what the hell is wrong with you people? Look, at the same time this was going on, an earthquake killed like 100 people in China. Terrorist bombs killed like 55 people over in Iraq. I mean, you know, the earth has killed more people than this little terror attack has, and everybody's freaking out, acting like the world's over. Now, like I said in text earlier, if the ghost of Thomas Jefferson came back, he would be so pissed off, and his pimp hand would be so tired because he would be slapping the piss out of everybody.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And you know what? When you get to a point where you're just saying, oh, I'm so scared, I'm afraid to leave my house because I might get, you know, I might get hurt. There might be a terrorist or something bad might happen. Well, then you might as well go out and get shot because you're done.
What kind of life are you having?
I know. And
this is another thing I noticed about the media, too. It's almost like the West Texas explosion was a big inconvenience to them. Like, how dare
it was.
How dare that shit happen while we're talking about terror?
The Waco explosion was an inconvenience. So what scared me more than any of this, though, was how easily these Boston people fell into line. They didn't question
This is the other one that gets me, Joe, right? It's like, okay, they've got the entire city shut down. They've got like 9,000 cops and armored personnel carriers, and, you know, each one's wearing their desert camo with their AR-15s and shit, right? And what do? They lock the entire city down. When they found the people at their house, right, and how does one of the kids get away? And then I'm hearing some weird crap, like the one that died, that he wasn't shot, that I hear one report that's saying his brother ran him over with a car. Then I hear another report saying he got ran over by cops in an SUV. But meanwhile, how does the other brother get out with 9,000 cops surrounding his house? And this is another thing that gets me about it. He gets out, and apparently he hides in the boat. They call, before they've got the suspect apprehended, they call off the lockdown, and the guy that actually found him was the guy that owned the boat in his yard and went out and found him. And then after that, to cover their ass, Boston PD is like, oh, well, here's a still photo from a helicopter where, see, we use FLIR and we see him hiding in the boat. Well, if you had a helicopter and you had the guy hiding in the boat, why did you call the lockdown off, and why did a citizen have to go out and find the dude in his yard? I mean, why?
Absolutely.
Because they love y'all, that's why. It's just, yeah. Okay, we must have got it struck a nerve. Yeah, I see another caller calling in. Hey, turn your radio down, caller.
Turn your radio down, caller.
All right. Wow, I can hear you.
Yeah, it's the cop. How you doing, Karen? How you doing,
Joe? What's up, dude?
Hey, what's up, babe?
Yankee, I'm on the border between Meese and Dixon Line and the Yankees, so I'm half and half.
Hey, you're cool.
I've been a cop 25 years, and I watched what they did. Number one of the first things you learn in the police academy, any kind of thing, you go for the injured, you take care of the injured, seal off the area, and you gather witnesses. As you know, there's plenty of witnesses and injured people. Okay, that was one of the steps they did. But as they were progressing, have you noticed there was a lot of conflicting stories? The news media was saying one thing, and somebody else was saying the other. That's why the chief police had to straighten some of the mess out, because rumors kept on building and building and building. One of the things the FBI always do, they're not going to tell anyone every move they're going to make. So here you got the left hand again, doesn't know what the right hand is doing. All they're doing is passing orders down to the lowest person on the totem pole, which is the local cops. The local cops are following suit from the chief. The chief is getting the orders from the government. So they're telling them, you go here, I'll go here. Now you got the National Guard coming in, okay, and the ATF, bomb squads. Now, they're getting orders from the general and all. Now you got more conflicting things going around. This is why they had to have a staging area somewhere and then start spreading everybody out in different areas. Now the question is It takes more than two people to set that thing off, what they did. There is more than two people, in my opinion, there's more than two people, those kids. Somebody else was involved. Where did they get the guns at? You know, where, you know, no license. So somebody else is involved. They're not even saying or getting involved there.
I think Rachel Maddow should be the other suspect, John.
You know, when all this first came out, I was like, really, look, I know the conspiracy theory crowd, you know, pretty well in my time dealing with UFOs and the paranormal and stuff, and I expected them to completely and totally go off. And at first they did. God, in the immediate aftermath of the bombing, I swear to God, if I saw that picture that was being posted on Facebook of some, like, blurry dude that's, like, 2 pixels worth of information standing on top of a roof, I was going to slap somebody because everybody was passing that around, and I was like, oh, my God, here the conspiracy theorists go. But then again, like, just about everything else, it's like, well, you got to take some of what that's going out there seriously. I mean, I do think it's kind of weird that, you know, I mean, what is it with Latin America's hit with a terrorist attack? There happens to be a drill going on that pretty much, you know, exactly simulates the conditions of the attack. And, of course, then there's the photos. It's like black backpacks are blown up, but the suspects are wearing white and gray backpacks. You know, what
and
about all these guys?
Still carrying the explosions. You know,
yeah, the guys in the backpacks.
I mean, still holding the backpacks. Yeah. And you know what I wanted to know?
And the lid of the steamer, the cooker, on top of a roof across the street. And when you look at the distance and the height, there's no way for that lid to travel all the way up 3-4 stories and land on the roof like that. Because it was powerful enough on the ground, but it wasn't powerful enough to travel all the way up on the roof.
Yeah.
Like
just yesterday they were saying, oh, they had all these other bombs. There were many unexploded bombs. They didn't say how many. So
yeah,
they already said these two guys were acting alone. So what, were they just running back and forth, placing bombs and then running back and getting another backpack and putting that one out? Or were they walking around carrying 5 backpacks and leaving one here and one here? Somebody would have noticed that, right?
Well, look,
somebody should have noticed
this. Other bombs.
The one guy's alive. He's been shot in the throat, and they say he's talking now, but apparently he's not talking. He's just writing or communicating non-verbally somehow. So, I mean, you can't even take anything that any of the reported testimony this guy say. Oh, here's another thing that pissed me off. It's like, oh, my God, we've got a suspect. And then you've got Lindsey Graham and all those other Republican dickheads that are coming out there. Well, we need to try him as an enemy combatant. No, you don't. Okay? We need to try him as an enemy combatant. Let's throw his ass in Guantanamo or whatever. No, he was nabbed by the police department. He's in the system. I mean, what do you need to try him as an enemy combatant for?
Yeah.
He's a citizen. You can't anyway.
No, you really can't.
Well, see, Russia notified the FBI last year about that one kid going over to Russia, and the FBI just ignored it. You know,
I don't know if they ignored it, but they did something they shouldn't have. But I'm gonna let y'all two guys go because I'm getting all kind of hate mail because we're talking about politics.
Okay.
listen. I'll invite Karen onto one of this. I'll find out when she's got a free Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll bring you on. We'll come on, and because we can get into all of that on Saturday. It's a 3-hour show, so we can get into a lot of in-depth stuff. And this Boston thing, I don't think it's going away anytime soon, guys. I think the more this kid they get this, I got to be honest with y'all. First off, I'm surprised this kid is still alive, and
Has anybody seen him?
Me too.
I know, and I'll be surprised if somewhere out of the blue he doesn't just he had complications. He's dead.
Yeah.
I will actually be surprised if that doesn't happen. Or if they don't lock him away in a prison where that no one will ever see him. Well, we had to put him under lockdown we had to put him in a cell by himself way deep in the bottom of the hill somewhere, and nobody's going to see him again.
You know, this just kind of makes me all wonder. Yeah, you know, if Christopher Dorner had done his little thing and decided to go off in Boston, would the Boston PD have handled it any better than the LAPD did? I kind of doubt it.
Oh, wait, I'm still flipping out that the feds blew the thing poisoning the president. I'm thinking, wait a minute, y'all supposed to be the best Secret Service on the planet, and y'all arrested the wrong guy. Come on.
Well, yeah. I mean, basically, from what I've read about it, is the guy was named, like, Kevin something with a C. And the only thing that they had in one of the letters was, it was like, we're going to kill you, Obama, signed KC or something like. And they arrest some poor little, I mean, this dude is down in Mississippi, right? He's an Elvis impersonator. And the next thing he knows, I mean, FBI's acting like he tried to kill the president. And who would take that seriously anyway? Anybody in their right mind that would consider trying to kill a senator or president by something in the mail has to know that they don't open their own damn mail. Oh, one more thing before I get off of here. I got to give Canada their credit for it. It's pretty sad when the Royal Canadian Mounted Police have to show the Boston PD and the Department of Homeland Security how to do their job. I mean, like you guys had mentioned earlier, everybody had said that the FBI had interviewed these kids and brought them in for an interrogation back in 2011 and apparently just let them go. What does Canada do? Canada's like, uh-oh, Al-Qaeda's going to blow up a train, eh? Well, let's stop it before it happens. And oh my God, holy shit, Canada did.
But you got Canada did that, and you got the UK caught the four guys with the toy bomb cars. Apparently, they know how to get terrorists now. It's just us idiots over here that can't figure it out.
Well, you know, what it reminds me of is, like, you know, that whole, like, Times Square guy that was like, oh my God, he put a bunch of diesel and fireworks in his car, and that's supposed to be a terror plot. It's like, I don't know, all of this bullshit and the way the media just seems to carry it and tries to tell everybody you're in a constant state of attack, it's okay to be in fear, cower in your homes, you know, trust the government, give up your gun so the SWAT team can, you know, be better armed than SEAL Team 6. It's like, okay, people, if that's what you want, you know, well, don't feel butthurt when you get what you ask for.
See, but if New York would get up being so uptight and legalize marijuana, you notice there's never any terrorist attacks on the West Coast. L.A. don't get blown up, San Diego don't, Seattle don't, Portland don't.
Man, before New York needs to worry about legalizing weed, they need to worry about legalizing 20-ounce sodas. That's what they need to
they
worry
already,
about.
They threw that law out. They threw it out, Gary. they threw it out. It's but hey, I noticed it in it's the FBI.
Yeah, wasn't that just an appeals court that came down on that too?
Yeah, they threw it out. They told them you can't do that. They said that's unconstitutional. You can't tell people how many ounces of soda they can drink. the Supreme Court already said to everyone said if it ever came in front of them, cause they were like, you can't tell people how much soda they can drink. What the hell is that?
But anyway, hey Steph, all I gotta say is you people voted for him.
Everybody.
You people, like it's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in the last two elections, there ain't been much to choose from. Let's be honest about it. There's not been much in anything that actually, there ain't been much to choose from in a while. But anyway, we're getting off of that. Jason, I'll talk to you soon. Don't forget.
I'll let you finish your show, Karen. Sorry if they're like hijacking me there.
From you.
It's,
likewise.
Oh, yeah.
I'm hearing people's voices. There are people that I see in the chat room all the time, and we talk, but I never knew what they sounded like. That's two people
look,
now that
they had the lines lit up from the room. I had to turn them.
Yeah, this is so cool.
I never even knew Cop had a voice. I thought he was some kind of law enforcement android or something like that until now.
Cop's been calling. Y'all see, y'all probably can't scare our poor friend out in Cali who likes to call in. Y'all probably get him.
All right, I'm getting off of here. Y'all go ahead and finish the show.
So y'all don't forget to follow me, Perspective X, with Stephanie Benetti and Angela Thomas will be following us in about 20 minutes. Well, about 25 minutes, helping us, and be sure to tune in. What are they? I think they said they were going to be talking about severe weather tonight or something.
Oh, really?
I'm
seeing a lot of comments on the chat room that people want us to get back to UFOs. So
yes, I know.
I said, okay, guys, you know, give us a question, give us a topic. What UFO thing do you want us to talk about? Somebody did say to me, have I heard of any recent abductions? And I haven't, but I just have had a lot going on here. I haven't really been keeping up with the UFO news.
Well, there's a new abduction every day, y'all. But I think what y'all mean
they don't call me. They call you,
but,
Joe.
But what I was thinking is, you know, there hasn't really been any new contactees coming forward in the field lately, which I'm not exactly sure why, but there hasn't really been lately. It's kind of weird, really.
Yeah.
Not sure what that's about. Now, somebody just told me, who was it I was interviewing about the Hudson Valley lights? Have you ever been up in that area in New York? I don't know where it is located.
Yeah. It's just outside of New York City, actually. And, you know, over the years, I used to go down to New York a couple of times a year to visit my in-laws. And so we would drive through that, the whole Hudson Valley area, you know, once in the summer and once in the winter. So I've seen anything there. Although,
well, I've talked to a lot of people that's driven through. You know, it's weird because the only people, honestly, that I've ever heard talk about things there were people that lived there or people that were associated with people that lived there. Kind of weird. I wonder why.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I heard recently someone else was telling me that there's a lot more than just UFO sightings going on there.
Apparently, I imagine there is.
There's a lot of other activity as well, like unusual animals are seen in there, like some of the panthers, and we're not supposed to have any panthers in New York State.
Yeah, I notice in hot spots you'll get other things that happen. A lot of times you have paranormal events that go on, but it's more than that. It's just a lot of weird stuff tends to happen in areas that are considered hot. Zones. There's places in just one or two spots in New York State that are hot, like out in Cali, down here in the South. There's certain areas that are hot, and a lot of times there'll be other events associated with it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the triggering of maybe the type of craft the aliens use may trigger paranormal events or maybe allow paranormal events to happen. I really don't know. But it does seem to go hand in hand. But by the way, for anybody writes to me, that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying all pins are related to UFOs before you even write to me. Lord have mercy.
But they do. I mean, and that's one of the things that I'm going to be speaking about on May 4th when I'm speaking at the Erie Paranormal Conference that's sponsored by the Pennsylvania MUFON Group, is, you know, this correlation and how I believe that some researchers, that some of us ought to be studying both of these topics together. You know, because I've talked to several UFO researchers who said, I don't put this in my books and I don't put it in my presentations because people don't want to hear it.
Yeah,
but there's often, you know, telepathy or there's poltergeist activity or there are these other kinds of what seem to be unrelated phenomena going on around UFO experiences. Bud Hopkins told me it's not at all unusual for a person who has had a contact experience to suddenly find themselves telepathic afterward. Like they start hearing people's thoughts and thinking people are talking to them and they're just thinking things.
Well, what happens there is when contactees go through the awakening and become consciously aware, they realize that they're telepathic in a whole host of ways. But it's the very first thing we look for as investigators. If a person's not empathic, we won't ever consider them to be a real contactee. It's a must. It's not even a thing. It's empathic. All contactees are empathic. Most of them telepathic, and it's just different levels of telepathy they have. But it's like anything else. You don't learn about it. You know, you may go through your whole life doing stuff like, and then this may happen to you, Karen. Oh, you know, well, I know who just knocked on the door. Or the phone ring. Well, I know who's on the phone. See that? It's telepathy.
Yeah.
And and there's a lot of that. Or you'll walk in your house and you'll just sense before you even see anybody, whoa, something's not right. Or you'll know your kid's in a really good or a really bad mood. You can just tell walking. Now, of course, it's easier with people you're closer to because you don't guess it. But it is, it's completely common with contactees, and it's something in the old days we used to consider it abduction criteria. Today it's just we put it out there because I want people to know that if you're experiencing this, it's a good chance that you are a contactee. If you're in the new age religions, or like what I like to call the old age religions, because frankly they're most of our religions today.
Right.
If you're into those or you're into certain things, especially stuff that we consider to be new age, if you find that you see events happen before they do, or you sense things going around you, you understand people's thoughts and designs, or that even a lot of people I meet now say, you know, I've always been a really good salesperson, or I've always been a really good closer, and it's because I've always had a sense of where to stop. Yeah, because you're reading a person's emotions.
Intuitive, yeah.
You know, you're like, oh, well, you know, they're thinking, oh, that's getting a little high, that's getting, oh, I can afford that, you know. You can sense that.
Yeah.
It does make you a good closer. And that's common with contactees, and we do expect to see that.
Yeah.
We really, really, truly do. It's just one
thing. Because, I mean, my experience with that has been that it's temporary. And I had it happen myself. In fact, I didn't know at one point that my contact experiences were continuing until after I was talking with Bud Hopkins, and he mentioned that. He was just talking generally about this telepathy thing. And I thought, oh, my God, I had that, you know, years after I thought I wasn't having these experiences anymore. And then I went back and kind of traced things back, and I thought, oh, crap, there was missing time. You know, but I didn't know. at first, but I found that it kind of faded over time. Although, well, I have a friend who is also a Wiccan or pagan, or she's more shamanistic. She's really, I mean, she does writing on this subject. She does teaching on it. She's really into this. And I find that when I'm in touch with her, when I'm, especially when I physically am in the room with her, I get it again. I become more intuitive and more telepathic. Like, well, I start hearing people's thoughts again.
Her thoughts are touching yours. She probably broadcasts a lot without even realizing it. A lot of contactees, a hard lesson for contactees to learn is they broadcast. See, though, it's different for married people, Karen, because people are telepathic, sometimes broadcast without realizing it, or they pick up without realizing it, or their spouses. So what happens is, over the years, you learn to dull it down. Because you don't actually know why it is that you just got in trouble, because you really didn't say anything, but somehow or another, and you can tell, you pervade whatever it was you were thinking quite well to the person you were looking at. This gets contactees in a lot of trouble, by the way. Once you learn that it's there, you can stop it. But it is, because of, you know, I've had spouses especially tell me, you know, while I was talking to them, and I got this general sense, like, and I'm not going to say what they said on the air because it was pretty bad, that I would never thought my husband or my wife would think that way, but then they knew they could feel it. They knew it was real. And, it was a very strange thing. We hear this a lot with contactees. But it's they do learn to dull it down, and then there's more that if you have children, a lot of times you'll dial it down in your head, because if you become too sensitive, anytime your kids do anything, you sense it, you feel it.
Yeah.
If you tune into your spouses too much, you sense and feel that too. And close friends, a lot of times will happen with. So a lot of abductees would act, because you would be considered an abductee, not a contactee. They subconsciously turn it down without even realizing it. Because you really have control over it. It's just our problem is, especially anybody that's above the age 30 group, is if you haven't been using it young, part of you still don't think it's real. Even though you know damn good and well it's real, there's a little part of you, maybe it's the Christian part or whatever, deep down, that still makes you think that this may be not real. So you're always kind of hampering your tries when you start it. That's why when you get around other contactees or anybody who's very telepathic, which I think anybody's telepathic is a contactee, it instantly picks back up. Your mind registers it and you sense it.
Yeah, because when I'm around this other person that I was telling you about, I mean, she has that, and she develops it, and she works and practices and totally believes in it, so it's never damped down around her. And I've found that when we just meet for coffee, for a few days afterward, it works with other people. Like, I can hear other people's thoughts after I've seen her for an afternoon.
Yeah, you'll let it go for a while in your head.
Yeah.
Part of that, too, is if you're hearing things or you're sensing things that you really don't want to deal with, you'll instantly, subconsciously start toning it back down. And most contactees or most abductees usually will keep their senses dulled to, I would say, about 10 to 12% of what they actually can do. And it has a lot to do with just life and life being a general pain in the ass. It really does. And it's a shame, but it is. Now, for a lot of people, though, once they realize they got it and they start to use it, once you realize that you can control parts of it, like, in other words, you know, you start trusting your senses when you're talking with somebody, going, well, you know, I'm telling this person, but this is not the sense I'm getting, or you know, I think this person's lying or whatever. Once you start paying more and more attention to that, and it starts panning out each time, of course, it just builds confidence and you get better at it. But you also learn that you can tone it down if you get into a crowd. This is something early on that used to bother me with contactees, and we've learned how to handle it over the years, but a lot of abductees, especially ones coming into the awakening period, will find yourself like in a room full of people, and all of a sudden, for no reason, just start crying or get very emotional, either happy or sad. And what it is they're actually sensing someone else's emotions. But in the same aspect, I've actually seen them, we've actually tested this, where they have walked in, 20, 30 people. We tried this at the X Conference, by the way, with several big-name ufologists. It worked quite well.
Yeah.
And I brought them into a room, and the person was really, really sad, really, really upset, made yourself that way intentionally, walked into that room, even though everybody was high energy in there. Within 15 minutes, everybody had their heads down walking around like somebody just shot their dog or something.
Oh, wow.
And so it's one of the things you got to teach them early on. They have to learn how to turn it up and off and control it, because if not, it'll control you, basically. It does make you make decisions, because you never know. You'll get mad. I've seen contactees just get mad, just like, what the beep, and just lose it. And,
yeah, now that's interesting. And I know, I mean, there are times when I feel emotions and I feel like, where did that come from? You know, yeah. And I feel like totally overwhelmed by an emotion and I don't know why. You know,
well, that's
I'll
what
be
it is. That's
driving home from work and all of a sudden I feel like crying and I'm like, why? What was that?
Well, that's just being
And also, one time at a conference, I walked into a room where there were probably 20 or 30 people and I just felt creepy. All of a sudden, like behind me, something was not right. And I turned around and I zeroed in on one person. I had never seen this man before. I didn't know who he was, nothing about him. And I just thought, there is something wrong about that guy. I don't know who he is, but that's just weird. He's creeping me out. And he wasn't doing anything wrong. He was like this middle-aged man wearing a suit. Seemed very pleasant. He was smiling and talking to people. And I asked Rich who that was, and he said that was John Alexander. And I'm like, okay, who's that? What's his field?
Yeah, what's
his thing? And he says non-lethal weapons. And I said, wait, what? And he said torture. Okay, I'll be in the other room.
How do you, baby? I'm out of here at this point.
Yeah.
But nice to meet you, but move on down to the next one. It's weird, but it is something, you know. I learned early on that you really, when people get involved in certain religions and certain things in life, it's a really good chance that they are abductees. First off, I don't really think anybody understands how many people are actually being abducted and what the scope and scale is. It's mind-boggling when you really sit down and you start going through the emails and talking to the people, because if you say that we're getting, ICARA probably can reach at any given time a few million people in a week. If you say even if we exaggerate and say we were reaching 20 or 50 million people a week, still, the amount of contactees we would get would be probably, you know, we would think around 1 or 2%. Now, everybody I've talked to in the field estimates that probably only 1 to 2% ever become conscious enough to go through the awakening process. They'll always know there's something different about them, but they never become conscious enough. So the consensus in the field is 10 to 15%. That's a huge amount of people.
That's pretty significant,
It's a huge amount of people. And Alfred Weber did the math one day, and I'm still hearing about it. And but it's not that they take everybody at one time. It's not that they're taking everybody all the time. And there are going to be people that get ruled out. Like if you come from a family of five, three of your siblings may not get taken. They may not have what they're actually needing in this. You know, so they may get taken from, you know, pre-birth till in their teens when you know, puberty is when all the good stuff starts. I should say all the bad stuff starts. But and up to about age 30, and then it changes into a whole different form. As long as you can deal with it, it changes into a whole different form. But doing that in that age, in that 20 age group, in that puberty group, they may decide that you don't have your psychic awareness may not be enough, your psychic abilities may not be enough. What they're looking for in your blood to breed to the next generation may not be what they're looking for. So then they'll just stop taking those people. It's nothing anybody did. It was just they're no longer useful for the project they're looking at. But wait a minute. If those people have kids, they will come take the kids until such a time as they don't feel like those kids are needed, because just because the parents weren't useful doesn't mean the kids won't be. It's a weird, weird thing. But in most people's cases, I find that it is a thing, and in different times, it's different activity at different times. And when you get to certain ages, if you're not actually in the keeper groups or in any of the groups that we consider working with them on whatever the hell it is that they're working on, then your contact slows quite considerably. It's not that I don't think they ever stop, but they slow quite considerably. Where it might have been once a week or once a month, it may be once or twice a year. Until such a time that a person decides they want to get more involved, and then I think they say, hey, look, you want to be more involved. I honestly think aliens really want us to be as involved as much as that we can personally understand and handle. Problem is we're ignorant.
Well,
I mean, not to be mean to humans,
but
we're just ignorant.
Yeah, well, we have this culture that teaches us that, you know, there's no such thing as ghosts. There's no such thing as aliens. There's no such thing as UFOs or magic. You know, it's all kids' stories. It's fairy tales. And, you know, I think we're finding more and more. There's a lot coming out right now. We've got The Secret, The Law of Attraction, all these things. And they're really talking about, you know, visualizing things, imagining things happening. And sometimes they do. I mean, I saw the movie The Secret. And my first thought, wouldn't it be great if that were really true? And then I thought, well, what the hell? I'm going to try visualizing something and see what happens. And like they said in the movie, start small, you know, picture something little and see what happens. And then that'll build up your confidence because, of course, it'll work. And, well, at the time, my birthday was coming, and I really, really, really wanted to go to some particular conference that was coming up around that time, and I had no money. I had no idea how I was going to get there. And I thought, I'm going to go. I don't know how. No idea, but I'm going to be at that conference. And next thing I know, within a day or two, I got an email from the organizer saying, you know, offering me free admission to the entire event if I would promote it on the radio show. So I'm like, okay. And I thought, okay, I still don't know how I'm getting there, but at least now, you know, that's a couple $100 ticket that I don't have to pay. So I wrote back and I was asking, like, you know, do you know of anybody I could share a room with? Because I got to figure out how to get there. And next thing I know, I got a free hotel room for the whole time to myself, along with the free ticket. And she was surprised, too. She's like, well, I talked to the hotel manager, and turns out they had rooms, and they were comping us, and so here you go. Here's one.
Hey,
and, you know, and things just kept falling into place, and I ended up being there, and I had a great time. And I, you know, things just happened. I just decided, okay, I'm going to be there. And all of a sudden, it was just like in the movie The Secret, they said the universe will just make it happen. It was like this whole thing just fell in my lap. It was so weird. But yeah. Now I'm like, yeah, okay, it works, you know. And people say, well, I don't think it does work because it doesn't work every single time. And I'll say, okay, when you play baseball, do you, every time you swing the ball or swing the bat, do you hit the ball? Do you hit a home run every single time? And they're like, well, no, of course not. And I said, okay, so by your logic, that means no one ever could. I mean, that's what you're telling me. And it's, you know, you use this visualization stuff. Sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes, no. You know, you didn't do it right, or you were thinking about something else, or it really wasn't the best thing to happen for whatever reason.
And you might not have wanted it enough. It's a lot of that stuff. It might be something,
yeah.
You know, you kind of want, but not want enough. It's... Oh, I definitely think you can force things to happen, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately. It's a good and a bad thing, because I think sometimes people will concentrate on something bad, unfortunately, and cause something to happen. But
well,
it's,
right, it works that way, too. But.
Yeah, it just does. But hey, I tell people, you know, it's a good thing to learn, you know, try to access, because humans hold our, especially Americans, we hold ourselves so tight and everything's so inside, and really there's a whole other world out there to explore, a whole other realm of senses that most people just don't even know exist. And whether everybody on the planet's got telepathic or not, if it's just a contact, I mean, we can argue about that for days, regardless, you should still try, because you never know. And hell, you might be a contactee and not know it, and when you find out you're empathic, you might start sensing it. I'll tell you a little secret, too. Contactees sense each other quite easily. Even contactees, abductees that don't know they're abductees will become friends out of the blue. There'll be places and all of a sudden they know each other. They understand each other. Yeah, because they hang out on a damn ship, but regardless.
Yeah, I've met people who I just feel like right from the first moment, I just feel totally at ease. It's the same way I feel with people I knew in my childhood, you know, people I went to grade school with. Only actually closer, because a lot of people I knew in grade school I'm not particularly close with anymore. I can buddy sometimes at a conference. I think it's happened with like 3 people over the 10, 12 years I've been going to conferences. That, you know, from the moment I met them, I felt like I could say anything to this person. I can totally relax with this person. And a couple of them have said the same thing back to me, you know, that they felt that way when we met.
It's funny too.
I don't understand it, but it's like that.
Well, contactees hang out for a long time together, and what's funny is there'll be sometimes an abductee or a contactee may be hanging out with people, or they may be watching like the kids or the teenagers and stuff like that. And well, of course, those kids grow up eventually, and these people become quite close. They have no idea why in life when they finally meet each other that they're so close. They're like, what the hell? There's that, and then there's a lot of time spent together on board ships. So a lot of people develop really, you know, personal relationships. So when they finally meet each other in the real world, they're like, man, it could be like brothers or sisters. They just don't understand it. Because really, for meeting someone for like the first time, you're thinking, damn, man, I like know who the hell you are. Where'd you come from? it's a really weird sensation because they really don't know. Now, people who are aware of stuff aboard the ships a lot of times will know, and it's funny because every now and then we'll be doing a group up and they'll say, oh, well, you know, Don, I seen you the other night, and you were wearing this red gown with these little thingies on the bottom, and they'll start describing them, and you had this one pink shoe on with these weird ears, and, of course, you see the person just freak out at this time going, were you, like, looking in my house or something? They live on the other side of the country from each other, and they're like, but it happens. I mean, they see each other a lot on board ships, and if they're working, what we call the groups that are either being trained by the ETs or working, a lot of times they have, you know, different types of clothes they wear when on board the ship. So, oh, I seen you the other day, and you were in that new whatever white thing they call them, and they'll start talking about it, and you had your hair flipped up on top of your head. It's just weird. It's weird to sit and listen to them because you can see the person that's telling them is like, wow, like it's right in front of their face, and the other person's like, how in the bleep can this person know this? it's crazy, but
yeah.
I enjoy it. That's
just it. That's why we're in this field. You know, it's fascinating because stuff like this stuff like this happens all the time, and there's just so much in the world. I mean, we can look around and we focus on the UFOs a lot, but there's so much. There's all the poltergeist activity. What the heck is that?
Yeah, I know. I wonder about that. There's so much of that, but I know we got to get out of here because I see Stephanie sending me them nasty messages like, get off of my airtime. Actually, ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking about Stephanie Benigny, who co-hosts with me on News on the Flip Side on Saturday night. She's also co-host of Perspective X with Angela Thomas, and they will be taking over in about 5 or 6 minutes. I want to tell everyone thanks for tuning in. Karen, you were great. I had a lot of fun tonight. Sorry, guys, we didn't stay on topic, but hey, you know, right?
Yeah.
Don't write.
We tried to get back. We did.
We did. We did pretty good too.
Hey, we were talking about government cover-ups, and that relates to UFOs. That they cover up false flags. They cover up UFOs. You know, we need to be aware of this.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that far off topic.
I promise, guys, I will get Karen on News on the Flip Side with us, and she can come hang out, and we'll let her come hang out, and she'll love it because we get insane on that show because you get to bitch about everybody, which is fun.
Oh, cool.
And now I tell people, well, because, you know, I've been calling the liberals the new communist party now, and the conservatives the old fuddy-duddy party, so I got communists and the fuddy-duddies on each side and then everybody in the middle. And one of my liberal friends writes me, she said, Joe, you know I'm a liberal. I said, you're not a communist. You just a wannabe liberal. I said, you're not a real liberal. Said, I'm going to kick your ass. I said, you're a libertarian. You're just getting the two words confused. I said, no, I'm telling y'all, the new liberal party is the new communist party, and the conservatives, the old fuddy-duddy party. And really, the majority of us are somewhere in the middle, agreeing on most everything in the country. It's just the other two feel the need to divide us. They just... It's the only way they can seem to keep control anymore. I think they're scared we're going to go off on some tantrum and do away with politics altogether, but who knows for sure.
Yeah.
It's scary. But we're going to get out of here again, Karen. Thanks for hanging out. Oh, one more time, tell them where you're going to be the next 2-3 weeks.
Oh, well, on Saturday, May 4th, I'm going to be in Erie, Pennsylvania, at the Pennsylvania MUFON's Erie Paranormal Conference, and that's going to be really fun. I'm going to be talking about the differences and similarities between UFO research and paranormal research.
Ooh,
and the week after that, I'm going to be in Florida at the StarWorks Conference in Sebring, and I'll be talking about the life of a contactee. So for more information on that one, go to StarWorksUSA.com.
And
I'm going to be back here on the Paranormal Radio Network Friday night talking with paranormal investigator Matt Moniz.
And then you're going to be off too after that, because I know you're going to be down in Florida. Anyway, I'll catch all of y'all up on one of the shows in the upcoming future. We're going to get out of here and turn this over to the ladies. Angela and Stephanie will be taking over the mics here in a few minutes. Y'all watch them. They are tough guys. I mean, they kind of scare me a little bit. But anyway, we're going to get out of here. I hope everybody enjoyed this.
Thanks, everybody.
Oh, thank you, Karen. I had a great time. Even whatever time, I always like talking to Karen. She's a lot of fun to talk to. And, well, you are. You're just fun to talk to. And you can talk a wide range of topics, which I really like, because some of my fellow ufologists who I love cannot talk a wide range of topics. They actually get aggravated with you.
Oh.
They're like, excuse me, can we stay on topic, Joe?
No, like, I've got that little ADD thing. I hop around, so All right.
Well, I could go for a Super Burger. But anyway, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to get out of here. Everybody have a great night. Hang out for Stephanie and Angela on Perspective X. And guys, look, enjoy your lives a little bit. Have some fun. Don't let them scare you to death. Get out and have some fun. You only live once. Well, twice or three times. But anyway, enjoy whatever time you're living. Good night, everybody.
You're listening to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
I'm through with standing in line, the clubs I'm never getting. It's like the bottom of the ninth, and I'm never gonna win.